Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis.
And Jeff Webb.
And this is Tax Tuesday. So it must be Tuesday, though the days are starting to blend together for some reason. And we have a whole bunch of questions already flooding in. So you guys are like, you guys are Johnny on the spot. You're going to make us work today, I can tell. All right, so we have, first off, take a look at the social media stuff. You can always jump on and grab all the good stuff that we send out. I know today we're going to be sending out, either during this event, we're trying to finish up some touches on a retirement under the CARES Act. There is there are a few relief provisions there that not everybody's aware of for accessing money. So we will talk about that a little later, as well as watching some of the wonderful videos we've done. Hey, this is kind of how this goes. We go through about 20 to 25 questions that are that we picked out of the folks that have been emailing in. And you can always send in questions to Tax Tuesday to Anderson Advisors. And then we grab those and do the and use them as the kind of the fodder for the actual Tax Tuesday. And then we take questions live throughout. It's the first time I've ever had to do this, but we're getting so many questions that I put in little Q&A slides so that we actually know.
When we're not answering on screen questions.
Yeah, because you know what bugs me is I'm sitting there and I'm getting all these questions and somebody says, could you advance the slide? And I don't know why, but that makes my eye twitch at this point. I'm like, my eye is twitching. So I just figured, hey, this is an easy way. I'll just put a slide up. And I used to try to do that, but it's too tough. So I'm going to try it again. You guys already have a bunch of questions. We'll get to them here in a second. Real quick, kind of the update. We have now had the Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act passed. That actually was signed into law. Was it yesterday?
I believe so.
Oh my God. It seems like a week ago, but it was actually yesterday morning. That's how fast this stuff's moving. The PPP program is back underway. The banks are doing their best to screw the little guy. I mean, to process the loans. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really frustrating because we have been seeing this over and over again. That the banks, and I don't blame them. This is the sad part. It's like this is really a Congress, but they really are going and taking care of their biggest clients first. So anyways, let's jump into some things that you might not have realized. First off, that if you had somebody pass away in 2020, that they actually are entitled to the stimulus check. So the IRS is doing one better, and it's sending stimulus checks to decedents going back to 2018. And before you think, oh, that's not a big deal. It's about, to my calculations, for them and individuals who passed who are under 17 who would be qualified as a child, which is really getting kind of morbid, but it was 37,000, give or take, and about 2.2 million others. It's about $3.4 billion going out to people who have passed away. I don't think they're entitled to it, Jeff. Maybe for 2020 they would be, but that's kind of weird because it's technically, what is it, a tax credit for 2020?
Yeah, what, an advance payment.
Advance payment, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that the, like, actually 100% sure that the 2018 and 2019 folks don't. But ready, fire, aim. Let's just give everybody a bunch of money, and then we'll worry about how to pay for it later.
And I believe I was reading that the whole Social Security deal is not going as planned.
Yeah.
The distributions to Social Security recipients. And,
none of it's going as planned.
There's been some additional guidance sent out.
Right. So we could bellyache all day long, but the states are having a heck of a time handling the onslaught of unemployment claims. In fact, if you are an independent contractor in the state of Nevada where we're at, they're telling folks it'll be mid-May. Mm-hmm. So you only have to somehow manage to find a way to stay alive. You've been in lockdown for a little over a month and, you know, I guess you could eat your carpet or something. I don't know. Like, what do you eat your furniture? That's going to be the new one. I don't know what these folks are going to do. It's really frustrating. Anyway, we already have a bunch of questions going in, so I'm not going to pontificate. What I will say is that the Paycheck Protection Program is back in full force. Yes, if you're working with us, we have inside tracks on a few different lenders that we have great relationships with, and we've submitted quite literally well over 1,000 of the PPP apps just to our main lender. And then we work with people and we're getting monies. It's tough. There's a bunch of good questions where I'm just going to zip on in through and just do it. Now, this is one of the things that I forget where I stole this from, but it was probably when once upon a time in Mexico or something. I think somebody said an American or American. And I really do believe that we have optimists and pessimists right now, and that what's feeding a lot of the anxiety. And before you guys say that this does not have an impact, it absolutely positively has an impact on health and on the economy. I'm sorry. There's two ways to look at everything. The glass is half full. It's half empty. It really does. And we're seeing a huge difference between it. At the end of the day, I'm one of those guys that says you always got to be on the optimistic side, even when stuff's going on around you, and you got to keep your, somebody said, I'm getting some interesting things about where the Americans should go. No, it's a free country, but I just say that we shouldn't be living in fear. And to give you guys a little bit, there's a slide that I'm going to show you a little later on about what happens with our economy when we have health epidemics and pandemics. Anyway, let's jump into the questions. How do I file for unemployment payments if I'm an independent contractor? We'll answer that one. Explain loans from the New CARES Act. I heard you do not have to pay it back if you continue to pay employees. That's the PPP, and I'll explain how that works. Does the CARES Act allow me to deduct losses from W-2 income with prior year accumulated passive activity losses? Jeff, I know, wants to answer that one. Can I deduct my entire home cost since all of us are working from home? That's amazing. We'll answer that one. If my losses are less than $10,000, can I still apply for the $10,000 advance loan in the EIDL? It's actually an emergency grant, so it's not even a loan, but we'll answer that one. PPP is only for salaries below $100,000. I'm the sole owner, employee of an S-Corp, and my salary was a bit over. Is there a specific way to apply? I certainly answer that one. We have a loan for new construction, which has been delayed due to Corona. Does that qualify under EIDL? Well, certainly. There's a lot of these that have to do with the CARES Act. They're not all, but I'll make sure that we get to a bunch of tax stuff too. What is the recommended way to file taxes for income property that is partially rented and partially used by the owner? There's a tax question. We'll get that. Can I write off 100% of my loss due to the coronavirus? I am a W-2 physician, income over $300,000. I own rentals under an LLC. And pay a property manager. Can I apply for the SBA loan and grant since both rental and W-2 income will be affected? And I love the fact that he used affected. The arrow had the effect. No, what is it? The arrow had an effect on the aardvark. Is it a good time to convert traditional IRA to Roth IRA now since there is a loss in the stock market? Really interesting question. And I think there's going to be another one kind of like that down the road here. Just like everyone else, I want to know your thoughts of how do we come out of this way ahead and thriving. That's interesting. I grabbed that one just because, it must be my narcissism. And I just figure that would be something fun to hit on. If you take a distribution from a retirement account with the intent of paying it back within 3 years, as permitted under the new stimulus bill, do you ever have to report the distribution if it is timely paid back? Great question. Suppose your traditional IRA was worth I think I picked a lot of questions again, Jeff.
You may have.
Yeah. Suppose your traditional IRA was worth $100,000 on January 1st. If its value crashed along with the market, it's now worth 17% less or $83,000. Are taxes on the conversion based on the account's value at the time of the conversion? And then would you go over again why we do not want to convert a traditional to a Roth? Well, you always calculate, so we'll go over that. And by the way, if it went down 17% and went up 17%, is it back at 100,000? Query. Don't you love stuff like that? Jeff's a numbers guy. I have a $500,000 IRA account with Schwab, and I'm planning on taking $100,000 distribution. Oh, that's funny. Look what I did. With the $400,000 remaining, can I set up a QRP account and set up a $100,000 loan? Also, yeah, we'll go over that. That's actually one question, although I asked it twice. It was like a knock-knock joke, right? I own three LLCs. One of them was just formed in mid-2019 and has zero revenues. What operating and startup costs can I expense to carry the loss forward without sending up any red flags to the IRS? We will go over that too. I'm inheriting my father's investment portfolio. He died in October, and we expect his financial advisor to transfer the stock out of the advisor's firm and over to my new account. The value of the account has dropped dramatically since my dad's death. What will the basis of the assets when they come to me in this new account, or what will they be? That's a really good question. Jeff loves those types of questions because he loves talking about basis. Would getting my real estate license have more benefits for being a real estate professional? Go over that. If I open my solo 401k QRP, do I have to file a tax return for it? And wow, we got a few more. Toby went crazy. You guys send in a lot of emails. I'll just say that. So I don't like leaving a lot on the bone. Let's just put it that way. If I Airbnb my rental property, do I qualify for some type of employment? And we have to use the NOL in reverse order. Do we have to use against the most recent year? Can we go back to 2014 and then come forward? Now, for those of you guys who were on 2 weeks ago, we're going to have a different answer because the IRS has given us guidance since we had that first question. It was about how you do the net operating loss. And they put it back in conformity with the way we used to do it. The way it was written was to bring it to the most recent year of the loss, and now it's going back. So I'm just going to tell you that. That's because the IRS likes to contradict the Congress, and Congress can't write. And we'll go over that and put that one to rest. In 2018, we put a new roof on a property in California. It cost $30,000. If we sell this property in the next year, do we lose the depreciation? So do we lose the depreciation? We'll go over that. So we have a lot of them. So we have a bunch of questions already. This is my new Q&A sign. So here's a few questions that came in live, and we're just going to answer them real quick. All right. Aloha. My C-Corp has a solo 401k plan set up. I'm an officer, but my wife is not. I want to contribute salary max amount possible and have the corporate contribute the max as possible. I'm 38 years old. I don't want to take any other form of compensation from the corp. What would be taxable to me? What is the best way to do this? I think I'll have to use a W-2 salary. All right, so I'm just going to get into this. I'm not going to go over. There's a bunch of other questions, but here's how it works. You can defer up to $19,500. Is that what it is this year?
I think that's what
for 38, both you and your wife. So if you don't want to pay any tax, then you defer that directly into the 401k. Then you can contribute 25% of any of your salary, any of your compensation into the plan as well. So you'd be able to, let's say you took $30,000 in payment, you'd be able to defer $19,500 directly into the 401k, and then you'd be able to take 25% of $30,000, which would be
$7,500
and put it in there. So you're going to be in the ballpark, probably closer to 26 or 27, where you're not going to have to pay any tax on it. And that's per person, but she has to provide services. My question, under the CARES Act, could a rental property approximate value $85,000 be taken out of a traditional IRA and rolled into a Roth paying taxes over a 2.5-year period? No, Greg. I think that what he's looking at is taking it out and then paying it back in. Now, this would actually be rolling it over to a traditional, and then you would pay tax immediately. There's no, this isn't like the CARES Act where they give you the ability to take an early withdrawal.
Yeah, several years back, there used to be a two-year that you could pay the tax on a Roth conversion, and that's been gone for several years now.
I think it'll come back. And the reason that it'll come back is because Congress needs the money. And so what you're going to see is that we need to raise capital because we're giving away so much flipping money. So they're going to say, hey, let's give these people an incentive to do a taxable transaction that's in their best interest. We'll let you spread over several years or 2 years your Roth conversion because some tax is better than none. And we'd rather get that tax now. How can I file for unemployment payments if I'm an independent contractor? So Jeff, you looked at this.
Yeah, I did. And independent contractors are going to be eligible for unemployment. However, the majority of the states are not yet prepared for this. Last I looked, only 10 states were giving independent contractors unemployment right now. Illinois started today, and I think California starts next month. Nevada starts next month also, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're saying. So what they did is they said that the federal unemployment, which normally you wouldn't be eligible for unemployment if you're an independent contractor. You have to be an employee. And they dumped that on there, and they said the states will distribute it according to how the state does. And the states aren't set up to do distributions of unemployment to independent contractors. And more importantly, they just had massive amounts of employment claims. What is it, 3 or 4 million people filing for unemployment or more? No, actually, it's more. It's probably like 12 million. I forget what it was, just a huge number. Just here, it was 500,000. So I imagine that it must be significantly higher all over the country. But we're talking 12% unemployment right now, and it's probably going to be closer to 25 by the time we're done curing ourselves, which I say dubiously.
So this is a case where, as far as documentation, you're going to have to contact your state unemployment office to see what they want for documentation. It's most likely going to be any 1099s you received or your 2019 income tax return.
Yeah. And somebody, let's see if this is relating. I think California started taking apps today for unemployment of independent contractors.
Yeah, I think I got it backwards. It must be Illinois that's next month.
Yeah. So, David, I think you're right. I've actually had some folks that were S-Corps, and this is one of the questions, but that actually got their unemployment right away. Can I contribute to my 401k plan if the corp runs a net operating loss for the year? Yeah, of course you can. It's a valid expense. And we've done that. I actually did a huge, years ago, I still remember this because it was somebody made a mistake and they made a $700,000 profit inside of a C corp when it used to be kind of bad to make profit in a C corp. And we managed to do a defined benefit plan the following year, carry it back. And between the 2 years, we were able to create the $700,000 loss and go back and get it. So yeah, I know you still can. Right. I'm a realtor and received two 1099 MISCs, one under my name and the other one under my corporate name, which is the best for reducing my tax liability. You don't want them both under the corporation, but if they gave it to you personally, you're going to have kind of two choices. If you have the requisite paperwork that says that you are an agent of your S corp and that you're under their exclusive control, then you can just literally just deposit it into the S corp, endorse it over. If not, then you're probably, what would you do, a Schedule C, recognize the income, and then just write it to the S-Corp?
Correct.
I'm assuming it's an S-Corp, but some states it might be a C-Corp. But it's almost always better to not have it go as a sole proprietor. Your audit rate goes up about 1,000% to be a sole proprietor. So I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying that it's bad. Right. If I and you pay more tax and you don't get to do an accountable plan, like all sorts of stuff. So realistically, you're supposed to pick one methodology. All right. If I pull out some money equity from a rental property, how will it be taxed? Can I avoid? Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be taxed at all. It's a loan.
Right. The only way that you'd have an issue is if you pull money out and you're not at risk for that loan. In which case, if it exceeds your basis, then you'd have capital gains, but this sounds like, hey, I have a rental property and I'm going to pull some money out of it. You're never going to be worried about that if it's just you. If you're in something else where there's other people that are signing on the loan and you pull money out and they give it to you, you could have a taxable event. The easiest thing is just to shoot us the scenario. We could tell you pretty quickly. Can you use money from a PPP loan to fund a Roth? Will that make you ineligible for loan forgiveness? John, that's a really good question. So the PPP could be used for payroll. It could be used for utilities, it could be used for rents, it could be used on interest on a mortgage on your property. And so if it's used as compensation to you, then you could absolutely take that compensation and put it into a Roth. Does it make it non-taxable to you?
I'm not sure I'm going to agree with that as far as the forgivable portion. Now, if it's going to be used for QRP, yes. But if it's going to be used for any type of IRA, I'm not so sure.
No, it's because it's compensation. He's not taking a deduction for it. So if I get a PPP loan and I write you a check, let's say it's Jeff Webb CPA, right? Mm-hmm. And you write yourself a check and then you take some of that check and put it in a Roth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the company is not going to contribute it to it.
So I'm recognizing it as compensation first.
Correct.
And then putting it in a QRP. Absolutely. Yeah. Or in a Roth. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's all. See, Jeff and I, we get along well. I could tell what you were thinking, though. You're thinking that they're putting it in like a Roth 401k.
Yeah, just pulling the money out and throwing it raw.
Yeah, so you got to be a little careful, but realistically, you're going to have pot of money too, and you're going to track that money, and then you get to make a certification. So as long as it's is within the realm of, I don't know how they're going to audit these things. I'm just sure some people are going to do really nasty stuff. All right, I'm a sole member of a PLLC. I received $10,000 of PPP. How can the money be forgiven? I'm an independent contractor, and the company pays myself. So Zeeshan, it is really quite simple. You pay yourself out like you were before. If it's $10,000, that means you're probably receiving somewhere in the neighborhood of $4,000 a month in compensation. So over an 8-week period, you'd continue to pay yourself your $4,000, which would get you to $8,000. And then you'd spend the other $2,000 on your utilities on your rent, and that would all be forgiven. It's over an 8-week period. It's called the covered period. And then you'll never have to pay it back. And get this. This is where Jeff and I get all sorts of geeked out. It's forgiven. And then they said, but it's non-taxable, which means you should also get to take the deduction. So you'll get a $10,000 deduction and you'll get forgiven for $10,000. So depending on what your tax bracket is, it's like a double whammy. Isn't that cool? Somebody says, can you share ideas on how to use IRC 139 in a C-Corp? So Todd, that is a really good question. And what it really boils down to is 139 is a section of the code for national big disasters.
Right.
Is it a national disaster?
FEMA-type disasters, yeah.
And what it allows an employer to do is reimburse any of the costs associated with that disaster of their employees. So in English, it could pay for any of your coronavirus-related expenses, including, you know, having to go home and like your all of your employees. So this is where it gets interesting because you can't really do a home office for your employees, but you could technically start reimbursing them for anything that they had to incur by working at home. So you could buy their webcams, their computer, their extra internet or something like that. I imagine there's some ways. And if it's just you, then you want to go a little crazy. You want to push that and make sure that you're getting as much money. Chances are you'd be able to write it off anyway. But here's the stimulus, and then I'm going to move on. Do you know why some people received the $1,200 in their account while others didn't, even when they use ACH? So, Eduardo, here's what's happened. It seems like a lot of people used intermediate, like would go to TurboTax, H&R Block, Jackson Hewitt, Liberty Tax, and they would get an advance on their refund. Or they'd go to their tax preparer who would give them advance on the refund, and a little fee was taken out. But that can't go to the tax preparer's account. It's illegal. So they'd use an intermediary account that was a temporary, basically like a trust account, and that was what was actually on these tax returns. What ended up happening is those accounts don't exist anymore. So when so you really have to look on your return and see what the account number was listed. And there is a tool that the IRS has. What is it called? Find My Payment tool?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just type in IRS stimulus and see if you can get there. And then you could see the last four digits of the account, make sure it's one you recognize. Because you're not alone. A lot of people have had this happen. Now, if it went to an intermediary account that doesn't exist, the bank's going to return it and you'll be issued a check. But those checks are scheduled to go out all through the summer, with some going all the way out, I think, into July and August. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a while before you get it.
IRS actually delayed sending out refund checks so they could get through some of the stimulus.
They had 30,000 employees that they sent home that now they're going to bring back, and they're going to pay them an extra 25% if they're in the touching mail and 10% if they come in. God bless our federal government. But that way they're getting through all these paper returns. And it's really interesting. By the way, we are now through the questions that came in from 310. Explain loans from the new CARE bill. I heard you do not have to pay it back if you continue to pay employees.
That's mostly true for the PPP loans.
Yeah.
I would not count on more than 80% of your PPP loan being forgiven if it's used for payroll to continue paying employees. The EIDL, on the other hand, is not a forgivable debt. That's what, 3.75% loan that you have to pay back over 10 years. And what's the deferral on that? 4 years or 3 years?
For which one?
The EIDL.
The EIDL is actually a 3.75. It's a 30-year loan. It's deferred for 1 year. If you're a nonprofit, it's 275. And they do that emergency advance of up to $10,000.
And that emergency advance is a grant. That does not have to be
repaid. It never has to be paid. But if you get the PPP, it goes against the forgiveness amount under the PPP. Other loan provisions under the CARE Act that you should be aware of is you can borrow from your qualified plan up to $100,000. So what that means in English is that if you have a 401k, you can borrow against the 401k. If you have $100,000 in the account, you can borrow $100,000. You get a year deferral. You don't have to pay interest on that year. It's just that you don't have to make any payments for that year. Then you pay it over a five-year period after that. Somebody says, this is a good one. This is actually related to this question, so I'm not going to advance the screen. For PPP loan, can I hire my 14-year-old to replace an employee I laid off? Or can you hire back laid off employee and then lay them off after we run out of funds? That's the situation. So Here's where it gets weird, Susan. Yes, you could actually hire your child labor as long as they're related to you, right? Then you can go, as long as it's not like working at a mine or something. You can hire young folks. But if you bring somebody back, you're really just paying them glorified unemployment. You're almost better off not. And the reason being is because unemployment now is up to about $30 an hour. In fact, we tried to hire, and I'm not kidding you, three different people last week that we put in offers to, and all turned down because they were making more on unemployment than they would if they came here and worked. So our government has now gone into competition with us, willingly or unwillingly. I don't know whether they thought about what they were doing, but they've made it really difficult for employers that still need people to get them, because many of these people are paid more under their existing unemployment, and they're going to continue to receive that for, what, 39 weeks? It's ridiculous. Stupid.
Yeah, so the purpose of the PPP partly was to enable you to hire back people that you furloughed.
Mm-hmm. And if you furlough them and bring them back, and then you're just forced to let them go again, all you did is give them money that's being forgiven. Congratulations. I call that unemployment. And a lot of people have realized this. There was a great article written about a Gallup in Washington that had a couple of salons, and her people actually got mad because they made less working for her than they were getting on unemployment. And so they were like, what the hell are you doing? You weren't even thinking about us. And she's like, I thought this was a good thing. So that actually turns into a two-year loan at 1% with a six-month deferral. That's the PPP. So there's actually, like, the loans are the PPP and the EIDL are the big ones. There's also the, it's not the Main Street loan, but it's the Express loan. It's up to $1 million as a standard loan under the SBA. They move from 350 to a million. You're going to have the ability to borrow from your own retirement account, qualified plans only, not your IRA, for up to $100,000. And then I'm just going to plant the seed, be on the lookout for the Main Street program by the Fed. They're going to buy back from banks about $600 billion worth of loans. You're going to see those coming out. Those are going to be somewhere around 2.5% four-year loans. And the SBA is going to buy back 95% of them from your local lender. So those will be out here pretty quick. Does CARES Act allow me to deduct losses from W-2 income with prior year accumulated passive activity losses?
No, there were no changes made to the passive activity loss rules. So if you've accumulated a PALS, passive activity losses, you cannot carry those back. The only thing you can carry back is the net operating loss, which is a business loss. Now, if you're a real estate professional, that's a different story. But
if you're a real estate professional, then you don't have passive losses. You have net operating losses.
Correct.
And you can carry those back 5 years.
Right.
And carry them forward 2 years. Right. Or is it indefinite?
Indefinitely. I think it's still indefinitely, even with the 5 year carry back.
I thought it was 2 years. Maybe my brain scrambled, but it's so five years back.
Yeah, you used to be able to carry back 2 years and forward 20.
Maybe that's.
And now it's carry back five.
And indefinite carry forward.
Right.
Yeah. So, you're probably right. But you go back the farthest year. That's one thing I want to make sure that I screwed up. I didn't really screw it up. I was reading the statute, right? But then the IRS realized that there was about half and half of the accountants were going, hey, we're going to apply this to the closest tax year, because that's what they said. Mm-hmm. What they really meant was the earliest tax year. So the IRS rewrote the language and said it's the earliest. So if you have a loss in 2019, you would carry it back to 2014, use up any income from then and keep carrying it forward. For a corporation, this could be wonderful because corporate taxes were higher before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So you can go back and knock out some of them 39% taxes if you want. Here we have a bunch of questions that have been coming in, and I know I'm going to go over an hour. You guys don't have to keep reminding me. If you guys want us to stop at an hour, what you do is you just stop at an hour. We're not going to stop. Can one apply for unemployment and the PPP? Yes, absolutely. They're completely separate. So in theory, you could be on unemployment and you can get PPP for your company that then pays for other employees. Can I use 165 to offset losses? What? 165? I don't know. 165 IA? Do you have any idea what that is? Could you go over loan forgiveness for self-employed individuals? It's no different, Sachin, than for everybody else. So when you have a PPP, they're just basically saying, and by the way, this is true for everybody here. If you're a sole proprietor, you can apply for the PPP. You can apply for the EIDL. And the way they calculate the PPP, if you're a sole proprietor and it's just you, is your net income divided by 12 for the year, And then you divide it by 12 and multiply that, this whatever that is, by 2.5. So if I make $100,000 a year, that's the max that I could use. Then I would have 8333, multiply that by 2.5. So I take 100 divided by 12, multiply by 2.5, which is somewhere around 22,000 or some 24,000. And then as long as I used that on the qualified expenses, I wouldn't have to pay it back. And the qualified expenses are paying me and paying the qualified expenses of utilities, rents, and interest on mortgages that are on your business. Somebody says, in 2018, I received 2 years of lump sum pension payments. It significantly increased my income. Therefore, I am over the threshold. Any recommendations? Yeah, you file a 2019 tax return and all is good. They're going to go off of your 2019 if it's filed. So if that was 2017, 2018, then Tom, by all means, do your 2019 and get that. And you're still allowed to, because technically you could actually go all the way up until 2020 when you file this return to get the stimulus. Can I deduct my entire home cost since all of us are working from home?
That would be nice, but no. If you're working from home as employees, it's an employee expense, non-reimbursed expense, and that's no longer deductible since beginning of 2018. At best, you could try to get your employers to try to reimburse some of these costs, because they could, your employers can deduct it. But yeah, you're not going to be able to deduct your home cost.
Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely 100% correct. I don't know what else to say. It used to be that if you had expenses that your employer didn't cover, that you would write off on your Schedule A, but you can't do that anymore. Miscellaneous itemized deductions, including non-reimbursed employee expenses, are gone. And this wouldn't qualify as a home office. It's not continuous regular use and exclusive use. So the only thing you could do is possibly under 139, and it wouldn't be for the entire cost of your home, but it would definitely be for any extra amounts that you had to incur for childcare, things like that, as a result of the coronavirus. Can Section 139 be used to reimburse shareholders during COVID? Yeah, it just depends on what the expenses are. So yeah, absolutely. Somebody then asks, what professions are deemed real estate professional other than realtors, developers? Would a real estate appraiser be considered a real estate professional?
And I've actually seen court cases where they've decided that an appraiser is
involved in the transaction.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The only ones I've seen that definitely do not are usually on the financial side, the lenders and such.
You have to be involved in the purchase and sale of the property. So if you are a mortgage broker and you're not, like you're just processing, they'll probably say no. But if you're involved in the transaction, a real estate agent, developer, any sort of somebody in construction, anything like that, then yes. And that is for one half of the equation. That is the 750 hours of being involved in a real estate profession. And once you hit that, that doesn't have to be on your properties. Then you shift over and say, hey, as an individual, or if you're married, both spouses, then you have a material participation. So a little bit of a different test. So there's two tests that you can actually use. And then if you get those, you pass those, that's called 469C7, then your passive losses become active from real estate. And you can offset all of your other income. It's no longer passive. So it's a pretty powerful tool. If my losses are less than $10,000, can I still apply for the $10,000 advance loan under the EIDL?
Well, the EIDL is not being based on your current year losses. It's based more on your prior year profits, your gross profit, I believe. So the calculation is actually done on how much you made in the prior year after you remove cost of goods sold, and then it's calculated on that. So what you actually lost this year really doesn't play into it.
Fair enough. The other thing you look at with the EIDL, it's not actually based on true loss. It's based on your operating expense. And so they use the cost of goods sold minus your gross income equaling your gross profit. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're really just giving you a 30-year loan. The advance is just based on the number of employees, and it's a completely different animal. So in either case, we don't care about the loss of your business. We care about your gross profit of your business and how much it costs to operate. And they even ask about lost rents and things like that in the application for some folks. So what they're trying to do is figure out how much they can loan you. And remember, this is a loan you're paying back. The only part that's not paid back is the advance. And they're anticipating that you're going to get this in conjunction with the PPP. So the advance may not be paid back, but you can't subtract it out of your forgiveness under your PPP.
And while they talk about it being a $10,000 advance, it's not necessarily that. Like you said, it's going to be based on the number of employees, and may only, if you're the employer, you and your wife, it may only be $2,000 or $3,000, not the $10,000.
Mm-hmm. Do any of the states have filings due in states where incorporated and are foreign filed? So I'm assuming what they're meaning is, do you have to do the state taxes? Are these actually required to be paid right now, or are they on hold? Or I guess I'm trying to read the tea leaves on this because there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Other than the July 15th deadline change, I don't know that any of the states have deferred payments.
Nope. And they weren't even being very nice about it. But it's up to the state. You would just check with your state, go to your Secretary of State and see if they put it, or your Department of Tax. Does the corp have to pay employment tax on if I defer salary into a 401k? And the answer is yes. You're going to run it through payroll. And I would actually run it through a payroll company. It's not worth it to mess around with all that stuff. It's so much easier just to do it through somebody else. And I will say this, if depending on how big your company is, if it's just a few people, look at using a PEO or professional employee organization. You're going to get better rates on everything from workman's comp to you'll actually be able to participate in a health plan and other things at a much reduced rate.
Yeah, deferrals to QRPs reduce federal income, mm-hmm. but they do not reduce Medicare and Social Security.
Yep. So you still have, you're still going to have the employee in state and federal mm-hmm. taxes, FUTA, SUTA. All that fun stuff. All right. In order to withdraw $100,000 from my solo 401k penalty free, do I have to provide proof of eligibility requirements, such as a COVID diagnosis, adverse financial consequences? The answer is, if you take an early withdrawal and you don't want to be subject to withholding and to the 10% penalty if you're under 59 and a half, then yes. Otherwise, if it's a loan, then no. Along with that question, it took a withdrawal from an IRA to make sure I could pay contractors. So it sounds like you did an early withdrawal, and all you do is you give your custodian, you self-certify those things. Hey, this is hurting me. That's it. That's all you have to do. And it's a little letter that you give your custodian. Usually they'll ask for it. We have them if you ever need it. I put one together for all the people that do our funding programs. I give them, can I file for PUA? Well, we didn't hear back on the PPP. So that must be unemployment. And the answer is yes. You can file for unemployment as an independent contractor. It only took me 4 hours to do it. What state was that? John, you got to have to let us know that because a lot of people are having trouble. Let's keep jumping in. PPP is only for salaries below $100,000, question mark. No, it actually isn't. So I'll just make this one really simple. You can only use up to $100,000 of salary to do the calculation. So if you're making $200,000 and you're the sole owner and you're paying yourself a salary of $200,000, you can't base the PPP amount, the 2.5 times the average monthly salary, on your $200,000 salary. You reduce it to 100, which means your maximum loan is going to be $100,000 divided by 12, multiplied by 2.5. And I think you add in salary, retirement plans and health insurance, right, things like that. But for a sole proprietor, you're not going to have any of that you're able to do, just because as a sole proprietor, you're not going to get a health plan like that. It's just not going to happen. It's usually 10 or more employees. Somebody says, is the picture of the guy in your Q&A slide, Clint? No. I was thinking of the Lion King picture I have of Clint. I should have put that up. I don't know if I've done that to you guys yet, but Clint Coon's my partner. He's got a really good picture out there with a lion. All right. So my wife and I are both on Social Security with no outside income. And we're not required to file a tax return. We are looking forward to the stimulus check of $1,200 each. All websites said we automatically get the Social Security direct deposited. Do you know much about that? I think that they don't have to file a return. There's a special site.
If you were on Social Security and were receiving just Social Security direct deposit, which I think is the only way you can get it, mm-hmm. you were supposed to be receiving a stimulus check automatically.
Is it a paper check or the automatic? Which
I think automatic.
And if they're going to line it up with Social Security to go to the right.
However, something has gone wrong with that. There was a notice that came out yesterday about mm-hmm. if you're a Social Security recipient, you may want to check this out. I think that was on the IRS website.
Okay, so you're going to want to look at that, David, and maybe Google just IRS Social Security checks, because apparently something's going on with it. It was supposed to be automatic. Originally, they were going to make you file a small return, and then they said, oh, we're not going to make you do it if we have your data. And now it sounds like you think they had a techno glitch.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but something didn't smell right.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. They're trying to do so much so fast with so few people.
It's hard to give away $2 trillion that quick.
Let's just give it out regardless of need. Let's just give the money away.
Just fly overhead with black helicopters.
What could go wrong? All right. I have my small business and also own a few rental properties. I applied for EIDL for my business, received an EIDL advance. We're about to April 4th or 5th right now, just so you know. So if you applied back then, I applied for my EIDL for business, received the EIDL events. Can I now reapply for EIDL as rental properties owner? Do I qualify? So the answer, Shankar, is no, you're not supposed to because it's an affiliated business. You should have done one EIDL for all of those businesses because they have the affiliated rules. That said, I've seen people do it. They were supposed to be turned away as soon as they saw that you were on two or more applications, but the SBA, again, has been broken. We have a loan for new construction, which has been delayed due to Corona. I assume it's the coronavirus and not because they've been drinking too many six packs. The boy, they took it too. Does that qualify under EIDL? Yes, that does. So you'll be able to apply for that. And again, the EIDL is based off of your, this is going to be a weird word, gross profit, which just means your gross income minus your cost of goods sold, which is the cost of your employee, you know, the people that are working on your job. So if you have a good accountant, good bookkeeper, they're keeping track of those things for you. If you don't, then go back with a time machine and make sure you get one. No, you just got to make sure that you do it right. And we've been telling people for years, what you got to do, you got to do. They always look at us like, oh, I got somebody who can do it. I got a guy for that, or I got a gal for that. And she's really good. But, you know, again, this is why you have to keep it in a certain format. Otherwise, you just get nailed. It's frustrating. All right. I have a trust and wanted to decant my trust in Nevada. Is there a tax advantage? It depends on where the trust is located. If you're decanting a trust that's an irrevocable trust from like California, then yes, you could actually move that trust to Nevada. And there's a huge tax benefit because if you have a Nevada trust, you have a Nevada trustee, and that's where the monies are managed, then you don't owe California taxes until you distribute the money to a beneficiary.
Now, isn't there weirdness with California that if the trustees are in California, they can still say it's a California trust?
Exactly. So there's actually a case on this where there's a California trustee and a Nevada trustee, and half of the money now is taxed in California from the trust. But if both trustees were in Nevada, there'd be zero tax. But then when they distribute the money to the beneficiary pays California tax if they're in California. Not weird.
It is weird.
Yeah, no. Richard Oceans is killing it, stockpiling billions of dollars here for all the rich folks in California saying, hey, I don't want to pay California tax on all my growth. And they're putting it in a trust. And that's how it works. It's only funny because it's true. All right, there's a whole bunch. Is there a reason I only got $1,300 for two adults and one kid? Our AGI was below the requirement. So the only thing I think of, Ellen, is that you were on a phase out. Isn't a yes or a no, but it's a partial, depending on what your income was. Mm-hmm. So I would look at your income for 2018. And if 2018 was above, like if you're married, if it was over 150, you phased out. If it was below that, then that makes absolutely no sense because you would have been entitled to $2,800 or $2,900, right? It would have been $1,200 per adult and one child. If assuming they're under 17, then that would be $500. Is that right?
That's right.
So you have been at $2,900. So I made $50,000 as a 1099 and I received $10,400 for PPP. Can I just write myself a check for and get the deduction? Is that too good to be true? Zeeshan, it actually, I don't know if I just write myself a check for $10,400. What I would do is I would pay it out over 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you can't do it all as income because you got 2.5 times your monthly income. You would pay your expenses with it and you would take your normal draw out. They're not going to let you prepay money. They're going to say, what was your average monthly? That's what you can take out. So in your scenario, using reverse engineering, I think you're pretty close to 4,000. So I'd pay yourself like 8,000 for the 8 week period. And I would pay other expenses. And yes, it sounds too good to be true until the IRS tells us that you can't do it. The way that they wrote it is I'm telling you the way the law is, which is this is not an exempt income. This is not a muni bond. This is not anything like this. This is a debt forgiveness that would normally be taxable that they then said is not taxable. It's not included in your income. That's all. So it doesn't say that you lose any of the deductions for the business. It just says that you don't have to recognize that. What is the recommended way to file taxes for income property that is partially rented and partially used by the owner?
If it's like a duplex and you just split it based on square footage, what expenses are personal, what expenses are business. Now, if it's a property that, say, a vacation home for you, so you're renting it out half the time and staying in it half the time, it gets a little funky. You're actually computing number of days. It was used personally versus number of days it was used for a rental property. Some of your mortgage interest and real estate taxes are going to go to your Schedule A. Some's going to go to Schedule E for the rental property. It gets a little weird.
It does get weird because some of it is if you're there and you're living there for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you used half the property for 6 months and you rented out the other half, then you'd have half the year. And then you'd have to take a look and say, all right, I was there for another half of the year. And if I rented it out, then I would get another quarter of the year. So you'd end up with three quarters being treated as rental property and the rest of it is, yeah. So your depreciation. That's why you hire guys like Jeff. It is kind of funky though.
Yeah.
I'm glad somebody asked a tax question because I was beginning to think today was all about
non-tax.
Yeah, all the CARES. All right. Somebody says, this is a good one. My question is, under the CARES Act, right? It's all right. They said something that had to do with the CARES Act, but this is a tax question. Could a rental property, approximate value of $85,000, be taken out of a traditional IRA and put into a regular business entity, paying taxes over time? In other words, can I take the money out of an IRA in the form of an asset? What do you think?
You can.
Yep.
It'd be kind of a pain, but
I still think it's cool.
Yeah, you can get. You have to get it appraised.
You get it appraised, but you take it out. Right now, it's probably got it beat up a little bit. It's good. Nobody's paying any rents, right? That's what they say. It's not my experience, but so let's just say that it's not $85,000 and whatever that value is. You took an early withdrawal, and you wouldn't have any penalty. You give them the little magic letter that says I'm suffering from coronavirus. Not that you have it, but that you're experiencing hardship. And then you, instead of putting the property back, you put cash back. Or you don't put anything back and you spread it out over 3 years. So you'd recognize $20,000 a year for 3 years. Or you could recognize it all in year one if you wanted to. Let's see, I'm in the middle of a cash out refi, my rental property. Do I have to wait for it to finish before I apply for unemployment? No, that has nothing to do with it. So you can go ahead and do your cash out refi. What they're doing now with the PPP, because like the LA Lakers got a PPP loan, Harvard, Penn, Shake Shack, Ruth's Chris, along with a litany of other.
Carnival did not, but the Fed bailed them out.
Fed gave them, yeah. Well, they raised a bunch of money. But anyway, there's all these big boys that weren't small businesses. Because like Small Business Administration, I think that some people forgot about the small part and they just said, hey, let's get on some of that free money, and the banks couldn't help them fast enough. I don't know. I don't want to go down that path. I'll just get crunchy on it. There's one other thing here. But anyway, those things have nothing to do with whether you're getting cash. Now they're supposed to say that they need it. All right. We have an LLC taxed as a partnership that sends K-1s to partners subject to self-employment tax. So that's kind of interesting. So they must be participating. We applied for PPP, but Chase auto-emailed said they need different docs. Do we get 940, 941 is partnership? No, you would use your K-1s. And that's exactly what they said, Eva. They said in a guidance by the SBA, they said that they would use that the partnership itself applies for the PPP. And for the partners that materially participate, they use the K-1s. Am I saying that correctly?
You are.
Can you go over the payroll credit if you don't get the PPP loan? All right, so there's two types of things that you can have underneath the CARE Act. One of them is that PPP loan where they give you 2.5 times your payroll costs as a loan that can be forgiven in either fully or partially. That partial forgiveness, by the way, is reduced by the percentage of employees that you no longer have. So like if I had 100 employees and now I have 50, then whatever my forgiveness is, I would subtract 50% of it off as non-forgivable, stays as a loan. You have an either or. If you get the PPP, you can't do a tax credit. But if you don't get a PPP, you get a tax credit of up to $5,000 per employee. And the way it works is for any quarter, which you've been partially shut down or shut down from the virus, that quarter, you would get 50% of the payroll expenses, including retirement plans. And yes, DB plans and things like that are part of that calculation. Health insurance, you add all that up for somebody up to $10,000 and you divide it by two. So it's up to $5,000 per employee. And you have all the way till the end of the year. But obviously, if you get shut down, it's only for that quarter. But if your income has gone down by 50%, then you get that quarter plus the quarter until you make over 80% of the previous year, quarter over quarter. So I know that's complicated, but it's basically you're going to get $5,000 per employee. If you've been nastily affected, like you're a restaurant or whatnot, I've actually done a number of calculations for retailers and for restaurateurs. They're almost always better off doing the tax credit than the PPP, even though they keep going out and getting these PPP loans. I'm like, yeah, you're not going to bring them back. You're not mm-hmm. even open. Have any of the franchise tax fees or the Secretary of State payments been delayed? And the answer is no, not that I'm aware of either. Yeah. All right. Can I write off 100% of my loss due to the coronavirus?
Well, my first question would be, what kind of loss are we talking about?
Yeah.
If it's a loss on your rental property because you've lost renters or they're not paying, you do have a loss, but it's probably a passive activity and you're not going to be able to write it off.
Mm-hmm. If it's passive, you just remember, unless you have passive income.
Capital losses aren't going to be able to be written off except for $3,000 a year.
Up to whatever your capital loss.
Right.
Or your capital.
I always forget to say that.
Yeah. So let's say that you lose a bunch of money in the stock market and you got freaked out and you sold your stocks. And then a bunch of them come back and make some money. You're well served to sell those at the end of the year, the ones that went up, to get full advantage of your losses and then just buy them right back again. This is not a wash sale rule where you're taking a loss. You're actually doing the opposite. You're taking the gain and buying them right back so that you have you get stepped up to the new purchase price. And that way it just makes life so much easier for you going forward because now you have a new higher basis.
So if you're a active sole proprietor or S corporation owner or an active partner, mm-hmm. those losses that flow through to you will all be deductible against other income you may earn. And as we said before, if you have excess net operating losses, you can carry those back to prior years where you may have had more income.
Absolutely. And that's what a lot of folks are looking to do, especially this year, real estate professionals, or if somebody took a hit and their sole proprietor or S corp or whatnot, they're looking to take that loss and take it back. And we go all the way back. So if you did it for 2020, you'd go back to 2015. If you did it for 2019, and some of you guys still have that choice, we might make a change of accounting methodology, take an accelerated depreciation, do a cost seg on some property if you know what that means. And we're going to accelerate the depreciation on things so that we can create a bigger loss. So we can go back and get some of the money we've paid in the last 5 years. And that's one way of getting money under the CARES Act. Net operating loss. If you had loss in 2017 and 18 and did not pay enough taxes to be able to use your net loss, can you now amend your taxes?
The 17 loss can only be carried back for 2 years. The 18 loss can be carried back for five years.
Yes. So Andy, the answer is yes. They took away that weird percentage thing.
Oh, yes, the 80% mm-hmm. limitation or 90%, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I know what you
mean. All right, so let me keep going on. I don't know what question we're on, but we have a whole bunch of these things. I received $2,400 apparently for my wife and I. Should I still receive bank deposits as Social Security recipients? Yeah, you received the stimulus, but would they still get their... It has nothing to do with Social Security, does it?
No.
Yeah, yes, so yes. People have asked about these recordings. Yeah, you'll get a recording. I know sometimes this stuff gets deep and sometimes there's pieces where you have to go back and re-listen. So absolutely, you can come back. We make these into little podcasts too. As per CARE Act, if a non-US citizen gets the $1,000 economic impact payment by direct deposit, is that considered public charge for immigration purposes? I don't think so. That's a tax credit. So do you have anything on that?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. This is a tax credit. This is only for people that are actually filing. So, if you're a non-US, it sounds like you're a resident alien. So then, no, that wouldn't be I don't think it's the public charge. Somebody says, I am a W-2 physician, income over $300,000. I own rentals under an LLC. So it's a single member LLC. It's going right on their Schedule E and pay a property manager. So they're paying somebody else to run the property. Can I apply for the SBA loan and grant since both rental and W-2 income will be affected? Your W-2 income, no. That's for somebody else. That's for the employer, whoever's paying you the W-2. They're eligible for the PPP and the EIDL. It has to be the business. As an employee, no, you get none of it. You do get access to retirement plans and things like that. Can I apply for the SBA loan for the rental, though? The EIDL, yes, absolutely. Somebody says, is a property tax consultant a real estate professional? And I'm going to say no. No, you actually have to be involved in the purchase and sale. What about wholesalers? Yes, they could be. If you're wholesaling properties, absolutely. That's involved in the purchase and sale. So you would absolutely be a real estate professional if you, as long as you meet the time requirements. And it's 750 hours and more than 50% of your work time. So is any of the EIDL loan balance forgivable if I have a 2020 operating loss? And they're not referring to the emergency advance. And the answer is no. That's just a loan. It's a 30-year AM. Now I'm forgetting whether it's a, how long is that loan for? Oh, I'm going to take out a cheat sheet and have to look at it. I can't even see it anymore. Let's see. What is it? EIDL. I want to say, no, it is 30 years. I keep thinking it's like less, but no, it's 30 years. It's paid over a long period of time. So you're good. Do you get forgiveness for a Schedule C filer by paying distributions? Yes. You absolutely do. So if you're getting the PPP and you're a sole proprietor, that's exactly how it is. It's any of your distributions to yourself, which technically is your net profit, but you file that little piece of paper saying what it was used for. If my S-Corp was a loss in 2019, no salary was paid to me in 2019, can I still apply for EIDL? Yes, absolutely. And you technically, you could still do the PPP if you paid yourself any salaries in 2020, because it's either you use the 12 months prior to January 30th, 2020. So it'd go January back to February, or you'd use January, February till the end of February. So January and February to do the calculation if you're doing it. Because some people just set up in January. And if you were set up before February 15th, you're actually qualified. So is it a good time to convert traditional IRA to Roth IRA since there's a loss in the stock market? Jeff.
And what I said was March 23rd would have been a great time to convert because the market was down at 19,000 points. Yeah, if you believe the market's going to go back up, and hopefully you do believe that, you're going to make money. If you had converted on March 23rd today, by now you would already have a 28% profit in your Roth IRA.
It's on the date that you convert. So, and the way the rules work, and somebody's, I know they asked another question about this farther down. The way it works is if your taxes are going to go up, like if you're going to let it sit there and cook for a good 20, 30 years, then if you're in a higher tax bracket now than when you retire, then it's not worth it. If you're in a lower tax bracket now than you will be when you retire, then it's worth it. So for young people, it's almost always worth it to do a Roth. For middle-aged people, it's almost never worthwhile to do a Roth. This is one of the few times where you might say, hey, I'm about to convert it when I'm down and I'm willing to take the hit because I know it's going to bounce back. But it takes a long time to recover. And the easiest way to look at it is if I have to pay tax on something, depending on what my tax rate is, that's a pretty big hit. Like if I take 20% tax, that's essentially going to take me probably 4 or 5 years to even come close to make up. That's just to bring me back even. That's not counting the fact that that money has been growing in the other deal.
But if you're also taking a hit in other income areas, whether it's W-2 or your business is taking a hit, where, like you said, your total income is down and you're in a lower bracket. It's
not necessarily bad. I always just tell people, like, look, especially when I work with younger folks, I'm like, if your taxes are going to go down, so like you're in a high tax bracket, then and when you retire, you're going to go down. You're almost always better taking the deduction. If you are in a really low tax bracket, you're not making much, and you think your tax bracket's going to go up, you're almost always better saying, let's pay a little bit of tax now rather than a lot later. And I have all those numbers. I've done the calculations numerous times on 20 and 30 years, and it's identical. If the tax rate doesn't change on a 30-year 7%, the number's identical, so it doesn't matter. Anybody who says, no, that's not true, I'm happy to show you the numbers. Do it all the time. All right, so that's a really good question. Somebody gets a star on that one. Should a partner's income in an LLC tax as a partnership not be calculated the same pay as a solo proprietor? No, you do the same thing, even if you're a partnership, but you're doing it for the partnership. So you'd add them both together. So again, you're looking at the net income. for a partnership. And people are asking a lot of questions about the sole proprietor. Here's the sad thing about the sole proprietors. You guys couldn't even apply for the first tranche until almost the last day. We didn't have guidance. It's really tough, really tough. If we just started our real estate business but have not flipped a home yet, but have lots of training expenses, can we still apply for a PPP to pay ourselves? No, it's based off of what you've past done. You could still do an EIDL though, Mark. So you could still do that EIDL and say how many employees you have. In minimum, you're going to get $1,000. That's pretty much what they're giving everybody that's got one or none. Is a sole member LLC or an S corp able to use the 139 deduction? So the S corp can, the sole member LLC cannot for the proprietor. They could for another employee. Somebody says, for a net operating loss in 2019 for a real estate professional, did I hear it has to be done for 2014 and forward and backward is possible? No, it is. You go back to the 5 years, the earliest tax year, 5 years from the date of the loss. And we'll just keep going on. We have a lot. Look at these things, Jeff. I haven't been scrolling through all of them. These people like to write books.
Those are really long questions.
Those are really long questions. So no, it's not. We're not. There's good ones. We'll get to them. Just like everybody else, I want to know your thoughts on how do we come out of this way ahead and thriving. So I use a little chart, and I want people to know, they call it black swan events and things like that. But if you want to take a look and say, hey, what do we have for history? What does history show us? We've had lots of epidemics before, and probably nothing like this. This is a really nasty pandemic. But if you look, even under Zika, Ebola, MERS, SARS, the only one where we had a loss 6 months later was in HIV, the AIDS crisis. And so when you look at those little stretches of 6 months, you see that the S&P usually comes back. And the only reason I'm telling you that is because there's a lot of doom and gloom. And again, there's Americans out there all over the place, and they're going to say how everything sucks. And, you know, this time we're going to really face plant and all this other fun stuff. And you just get it out of your head. It does nothing good for you. Nothing good for you. In fact, all it does is cause anxiety. The death rate, the real death rate, has actually gone up in this society a lot more than the coronavirus has impacted us. It's almost twice as much. And I think a lot of that has to do with the stress. And the number one killer in the United States, and you're not hearing this probably on the news, though some places are talking about it, the number one killer in the United States is actually poverty. And it kills about 800,000 people a year. And what we just did is we just cast a whole bunch of folks right into poverty. And I think it's horrible. So I like to gripe. And then I watched our mayor go into the and get hammered by Anderson Cooper, Miss Goodman, our Las Vegas mayor. And whether you like her or not, I looked at her as I would my mom, and I wouldn't want somebody talking to my mom that way. And I didn't like it, whether they like what she said or not. And I get all these, you know, yes, we have to be careful and all that. But boy, oh boy, oh boy. People just seem really hell bent on making sure that everybody's locked away. First time in society, I think, that you've actually locked away people that aren't sick to protect them from themselves. And I don't know. Everybody has their point of view. I believe that you do things prudently, but there are civil liberties, and we may not want to trample on them so easily. But we're not going to get into all that, right? More stuff. Jeff looks at me and goes, stop it, Toby. Taxes, taxes. My mom would not take the interview to go to the firing range, to go into the firings. I have not done my 2019 taxes. Can I still apply for CARES and other government bailout programs? Yes. We would just use something as a backup. Now that we're in the first quarter, or we're beyond the first quarter, what do we need to do as far as taxes are concerned? No, we're in the second quarter. So nothing? No. Let's see. I don't know what that question really meant. Toby, you are the best. See, that's what I love. That's when people do that. During your CARES Act, there was an item that has an expiration of June. And that was the 10,000 out of the IRA. No, I think that you have the 10,000 up until about September, I want to say. And the PPP is what's actually June, but it keeps running out of money. They're going to keep throwing more money in it. So they'll be able to do it. QRP partnered with a couple that are not using retirement funds. What's the best way to cash out, taking into consideration I need non-recourse loan for my QRP? So you're not going to be able to do any sort of loans with an IRA, but if you do a 401k, then the 401k, which is a QRP, can actually have debt. You don't have to worry about unrelated debt finance income. So that's probably where there's a little bit of a mix, because if you're talking to your IRA people, they're going to say, oh, no, we can't do that. And you can't do that. If taking $100,000 out of an IRA now with a plan to pay it back within 3 years, does this $100,000 need to be reported as income? Jonathan, the answer is right now, I would say no, because it doesn't make any sense that they'd make you pay tax on something that is a trustee-to-trustee transfer. But they haven't given us guidance. They still may come back and try to say it's about 50-50 out there, but just using the black letter language of what they said, no. Somebody says that the IRS website keeps saying, what is it, says payment status not available. I think it's
probably overwhelmed.
It's overwhelmed, yeah. All these systems were not built for this. We did more SBA loans in 14 days than they'd done in the 14 years combined, previous 14 years combined. All right. How does the stimulus affect taxes for property owners?
Very little, except for the potential to get the EIDL loan for property owners, or if they're real estate professionals, it allows them to carry their losses back.
Yeah, that's the big one. So if you are a real estate owner, I'm with you, Jeff. I'm like, it doesn't really have much in there for you, except that you can get the EIDL. You're absolutely right, which is a loan. But for taxes, it's the net operating loss carryback. And that's only available to you if you're a real estate professional. So if you have passive losses, no benefit. If you have active losses, you do. Can a limited partnership distribute appreciated stocks to its partners? Are there tax implications? Will they pay tax when they eventually sell the shares? Yeah, so you have inside basis, outside basis, all these fun things. So if you give a share to the partnership, it receives your basis. When it gives it back to you, it's still your basis. Nothing changed. It's not a taxable event.
Yeah, partnerships distribute assets at the partnership's cost basis, whereas S corporations distribute assets at fair market value, and there's gains and a whole bunch of other fun stuff on appreciated property.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, my new tenant can't move in due to their being, they can't pave the walkway because it's considered a non-essential business. This in turn is causing a delay. Am I eligible for the EIDL? Yes. Is it worth it to apply? Yes. The EIDL is going to give you a loan for 30 years at 3.75% based on your gross profit, which is your gross income minus your cost of goods sold. Did I say that right?
Yep.
So there's a beauty salon. I want to read that one, but it looks like she left. Oh, I love when some of these people just got hammered away, and I just feel so bad for them because they just got shut down, and it's just so not fair.
I need them places to open back up.
You
need
do?
A haircut.
Yeah, Jeff. I'll give you a haircut. All right. If you take a distribution from a retirement account with the intent of paying it back within 3 years, do you ever have to report the distribution? And that's right now I would say no. And I would say it defeats the purpose of it. The IRS may come back with guidance. If they don't do a rev proc, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
They could even come out with what they think and you still don't listen to them, because the clear letter of the law says that is treated as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. It's not a 60-day roll. It is considered a trustee-to-trustee transfer, which means it never went into your pocket.
Yeah, I look for more guidance near the end of the year before the 2020 forms come out.
Mm-hmm. They may want to change it, but I don't want to listen to them. If we have to, if it's law, we listen to them. Otherwise, it's an opinion. But gosh, they said ratably over the 3 years. But if you pay it back before the end of the third year, it's treated as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. So I could just select, I'll pay it all in year three, but if I pay it back before the end of the year, then I have no tax. So I don't know how they get around that.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's always fun. We just got some huge. How can you apply for EIDL if the site does not accept? They're going to reopen it. They're getting new money. So just hang tight. Keep trying. It's going to happen. But they ran out of money. They shut it down actually before the PPP loans. We knew that was coming. We had staff entering transactions all night. It was brutal. Brutal, those 2 weeks. When somebody's making fun of us, we're not even at an hour and a half yet. They're not supposed to make fun of us. I'm a new investor who operated as a sole proprietor in the last quarter of 2019 and corped my entity around February 28th. So that entity is beyond the February 15th. Can I apply for the EIDL and PPP? Yes, because you were a business before, but I would apply under its previous form. Wouldn't you?
I would probably document under its previous form. Yeah.
Make it easy for them, because that's going to be the way that they're going to look at it. Your documents that they ask, which is going to be your Schedule C from 2019, that's what they're going to want to see. I'm a small C corp, pay myself $4,000 a month. You would qualify. depending on what, you know, what other things you, if you do a retirement plan or anything like that, but you, you're going to qualify for at least $10,000 under the PPP. You'll get about $1,000 under the EIDL and have to take that $1,000 off of the PPP. So realistically, I'm probably just going to do the PPP loan. Does owning one single family home make you an active participant in the eyes of the IRS, even if the property management in place? Yeah, actually it does. As long as you have, you're the one who hires the property manager, you are an active participant. And that is means you're entitled to up to $25,000 passive loss against your income, but it phases out after $100,000 of adjusted gross income. So it's a phase out rule. So if you're making less than $100,000 a year, fantastic. You get to write off up to $25,000 of your passive losses. For my business, QRP 100% loan, can I choose the interest rate and term? It's a 6-year term. It's 1 year of deferral, and the interest rate is going to be right around 4%. It's going to be prime plus one, right around in there. So it's a reasonable interest rate, and there's not a hard and fast rule on it. There's stuff going back and forth. I actually get into it with my partner once in a while on it. I always look at the federal AFR and say, man, they're the lowest. Why do they change that?
Yeah, what IRS is mainly concerned with is those below market rates.
Yeah, and then you have federal AFR rates, which is what you're, if you loan to a family member, that's what you're doing. Can I apply again for a PPP if I already did one with the bank and it's not been approved yet? Yeah, you actually can. Absolutely.
Until you sign the loan documents, you don't have a PPP loan.
Yeah, they may not like that. Do you or somebody you know help with setup of QRP for minor kids? It's going to have to be an UGMA, right? You're going to have to set up an account for that minor.
I don't think they can contribute to it.
Right. You'd have a custodial account is what you have. So, and Shankar, yeah, reach out. Like Patty can grab that name. Give it over to Eric or somebody who does that stuff. Oh, somebody just wrote me a book. Richard, you're killing me. Suppose your traditional IRA was worth $100,000 on January 1st. If its value crashed along with the market, is now worth 17% less or just about $83,000. Are taxes on a conversion based on the account's value at the time of conversion? Yes. Would you go over again why we do not want to convert traditional to a Roth? Because it's taxable. But you might be okay paying tax on the 83 if it's going to immediately bounce back up to the 100. But it's really tough to make that up. So I'd just rather, like, I probably wouldn't do anything with it if it's me. What about you, Jeff?
I have a lot of traditional stuff, and I'm just going to leave it alone and start taking it out eventually, paying the tax then.
Yep. All right. Somebody says, all right, so this is Richard. I am going to try to answer this question. It is a long one, but it says, when property is jointly owned by a married couple, there is a step-up in basis when the first spouse dies and another step-up in basis for inheritors when the final spouse passes in. No, kind of, maybe. If you are in California, the property steps up. If you're in a separate property state, then only half of the property steps up. So if you're in community property state, you get a full step up when first spouse passes. So they could they get to depreciate at a much higher amount.
Now, aren't there some community property states where the step up is only 50%?
I don't think it. No, community property, I think you're stuck. Is it possible to restart the depreciation if it's owned by the LLC? Yeah, it doesn't matter because your step up is based on the property in that LLC when you own the LLC yourself. So remember that we were just talking about the stocks going in and out. You get that basis. So the value of the LLC steps up. The value of its assets is therefore stepped up. So if somebody passes, it doesn't matter whether it's an LLC, you're still getting it. And then they're saying, hey, California held properties in property 13. As an example above, upon the death of the final spouse, the inheritors will inherit the property 13 tax basis. Actually, it's the step up in basis, and California doesn't adjust the basis of the shares when it's inherited, I don't believe.
No.
They don't. So if the inheritors transfer it, it doesn't affect your 13, so don't worry. In fact, in all these situations, Richard, I'm just going to put your mind to rest. When you're dealing with family members and closely held LLCs where there's no other beneficiaries, they look at the documents and they say, oh, it's still the same beneficiaries. There is no resetting of the Prop 13. You cannot have to worry about it. Makes your life a little easier. I have a $500,000 IRA account with Schwab, and I'm planning on taking $100,000 distribution. With the $400,000 remaining, can I set up a QRP and set up a $100,000 loan?
Yes, you can if you have a business to set a QRP up in.
Yes. And you need to have a sponsor of that, and then it goes right on over. I'm just going to go to the next question.
Really? Oh, sorry.
Have you ever seen me actually just do
one? No, I know.
All right. I own three LLCs. It's because it's 430-something. I own three LLCs. One of them just formed in mid-2019 and has zero in revenues. What operating and startup costs can I expense to carry the loss forward without sending up any red flags to the IRS?
Well, first, it depends on how you're being taxed. As we've talked about, an LLC is not a taxing entity. So if you're set up as a corp, any of your pre-organization expenses will be startup fees. Mm-hmm. And then any normal operating expenses to keep that corporation going will be able to be expensed. Now, if you're operating as a personal or mm-hmm. a Schedule E, I'm a little more leery about taking certain startup costs because they tend to be a very large amount of expense against no income. Mm-hmm. And that can sometimes draw the IRS's attention.
Yeah, what's always best is not to have a big fat loss showing up somewhere on a active business. So that's why we tend to use C-Corps, because even if there's, the IRS doesn't care, that 80% of them zero out. They either zero out or have a loss mm-hmm. because the individual doesn't get that loss. It just stays in there. So they're not worried about you doing anything crazy when you're doing that. What they're looking for you individually is they're looking to see if you're doing something that's essentially a hobby that really doesn't have the expectation of making a profit and getting personal benefit by writing off your taxes with it. So they get a little crunchy about that. So here, you still take your startup costs as long as you are actually in operation, which if it's real estate, you have to actually have it rented. So there's no such thing as zero revenues. You would just carry that until you actually have revenues. So I hope that helps. Can I apply for the PPP if I already did it with one bank that has not approved the loan? Yes, you can. How much EIDL can I qualify for? How is it calculated? You can go up to $2 million and it's going to be half of your gross profit, which is an actual term. And any idea when money is deposited after signing the PPP loan? Yeah. So Joe, it's actually 10 days after they give you an ETRAN number the bank has to fund. So the day that they get it through to the SBA and the SBA says, hey, we're going to buy this loan from you, Mr. Bank, they have 10 days to document it, get you a loan doc and sign it. So I've actually seen it where they get the ETRAN and have it funded within a day. Mm-hmm. I have a corporation that started November 19th. I'm the sole owner, no employees. I was going to elect S status for 2019. I haven't filed taxes yet. What am I eligible for? So they did it in November 2019. It's going to be too late to do your S status. You would have had to have done that by the 15th of the third month following.
March. Well, so they couldn't do it for 19 or 20 without doing a late election.
Yeah. So you could possibly do it, but you're still going to qualify under the EIDL. The PPP, it depends on whether you paid yourself payroll. Wouldn't it be better to take the tax credit at the end of the year than to try to apply for a loan? Please explain. In some cases, the reason people do the PPP is because they may not have to pay it back. The tax credit is limited to a certain dollar amount per employee. So if you have 20 employees, you could get a $100,000 tax credit. If I have 20 employees, I might get a PPP that's $180,000 and not have to pay it back. So that's it. He's forgetting to answer the question about the inherited stock portfolio and its basis. Did I forget to answer that?
Did we skip that? An inherited stock portfolio, I guess we did skip over that.
No, we did say that because we said, is it the date of passing or is it the date of, so we didn't dive into it deep enough.
So your basis is determined upon the date of death. Now, there is something called an alternative valuation method, which picks the date 6 months later.
Right.
You don't want that date. I believe that the date of death was October, so 6 months will be now.
Yeah, so I'm sorry for forgetting that. So, so when somebody passes, the basis step up is actually the date of passing. And then usually somebody's going and they're saying, oh, maybe later on it's gone up in value, mm-hmm. and you do get to use the alternative date. But this is what happened in 2007 and 2008. You would have real estate fall off a cliff.
Right.
And they're trying to sell it 2 years later, and it's half of what the value was for estate tax. Mm-hmm. They ended up with an estate tax that they owe, and they're selling off the property and getting pennies on the dollar for the property because they have this big tax bill, and it wasn't enough to pay the tax bill. I actually saw that more than once. and it's pretty a sad situation, but the IRS is really sympathetic.
And the other good thing about the inheritance is no matter when the person who passed away bought the securities, everything's considered long-term mm-hmm. to you.
That is a good one. So, yeah. So if you inherit, everything's long-term automatically.
Oh, wait, we didn't skip. We just got to it.
Oh, I'm inheriting my, oh gosh. I remember seeing it. What is the basis of assets when they come to me? All right. Oh, this is why I shouldn't read the note. Sometimes I go crazy. All right. So we just answered that one. Let me see if I can make it go. All right. Can you expense a startup expense if you have an LLC tax as an S and not a C? Yeah, it would just go into the S-Corp expense. And that's an interesting one because you get to write off the losses on an S-Corp up to your basis. So if you put the money in, then technically you could write that off. But again, it comes down to when are you actually in business? And if it's real estate, it's when you, if it's investment real estate, it's when you buy that real estate and you have to start generating income. It's not even when it's vacant, it's when it's actually making money. So we tend to use C-Corps just because we can capture that expense and just keep carrying it until we're ready to use it. Can passive losses from cost segregation be taken on W-2 income if your spouse is a real estate professional? Yes. Either spouse qualifies for real estate as long as you're married filing jointly. Would getting my real estate license have more benefits for being a real estate professional? It depends on if you're using it.
Right. If you're just getting it, hoping to look more like a real estate professional, it's not going to do anything for you.
It's what you actually do. And it's 750 hours in real estate and real estate transactions. So that could work. Mm-hmm. And it certainly helps if as long as that's what you're doing, if you're making money at it. Somebody says, oh, this is a really good one. Somebody asked about a HOA. This is great. Homeowners Association, nonprofit 503 apply. So a 501c3. If that's what you're asking, could they apply for an EIDL? The answer is yes. Kind of cool. Love that stuff. Can I open my solo QRP? Do I have to file a tax return for it?
Well, that depends. As long as the value of the assets is under $250,000, you do not have to file a tax return.
Yeah. If it's under 250 grand and it's married filing or married couple, no return. Now, there's a reason to file the return if you have real estate in there, and that's because it starts the audit clock ticking mm-hmm. for 3 years. Now, we're not seeing audits of exempt organization. I think I've seen one or two in 20 years, but they do happen from time to time. And if you want to shut that door, you just file the tax return on it, even if it's 100 or 150,000.
And I've heard that often for any kind of tax return that you may not be required to file because it starts the clock ticking on the statute of limitations mm-hmm. and gets things set in stone, especially though on these QRPs that have hard assets in them.
Yes. So sometimes that's better. It's just filing it, even though you don't have to. It's a 5,500 and they're not horribly difficult. I'm trying to move ahead. Somebody just says, my husband is a sole proprietor and I own an LLC. Can we each apply for PPP and EIDL? The answer is you can both apply depending on the type of LLC that is. You would both technically be able to apply for the PPP. The EIDL, you have to look at the affiliation rules and see if you're going to do one for multiple entities or two different ones. It depends on the ownership. Mm-hmm. So if you're married, I would generally say you're an affiliated party and you would do one big return. And then the question is how you divvy that up when they approve it. So you know, these ones, if it's under 200,000, they don't even require neither of those require a personal guarantee. Period. If I Airbnb my rental property, do I qualify for some type of unemployment?
You probably qualify for unemployment and possibly PPP and possibly EIDL. You qualify, and you can thank everybody at Airbnb who wrote into Congress to get this put in.
Yep. Now, the Airbnb, the big thing is it's 7 days or less average rental. If you're doing Airbnb where it's 2 weeks or you're providing substantial services, like you're changing all the sheets and you're going in there and cleaning it every day and you're basically a hotel, that might work. Otherwise, if it's more than 7 days, so if it's 8 days average rental or bigger,
right,
then that's passive. And then you don't.
But correct.
Airbnb averages about 3 days. So you should. So somebody said, hey, the pandemic slide, we didn't shut anything down. You are right. And, I'm cognizant of that. I'm just looking at it saying, hey, history being the best teacher, as close as we can get, we always came back and bounced back globally. Is it going to happen this time? I just think that never in history has it not recovered. Sometimes it takes a little longer, but it always, our economy always has recovered. So the graph of the S&P goes up over time, period. Can you still qualify for unemployment if you have a 1099, by the way? Yes, you can. That's through your state, but that was what was authorized under the CARES Act. Do we have to use NOL in reverse order? Do we have to use it against the most recent year first, or can we go back to 2014 and then come forward?
Well, as we said before, you have to go back to the earliest year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an 18 NOL, you have to take it back to 2013, 19 to 14, and 2020 to 2015.
Absolutely.
And if it's a newer corporation, you just take it back to the earliest year you can.
Yep. Somebody said, I own a condo that has a hotel rental program, which is better, EIDL or PPP? You're probably going to have to do the EIDL because if it's a rental program, it's probably passive. But it depends. If you're getting a salary, then you do both. And then the way they relate, the EIDL, they give you an emergency advance of up to $10,000, and it's based on the number of employees. So if you have five employees, you're going to get $5,000. And that is subtracted from the forgiveness out of a Paycheck Protection Program loan. I'll be 59 and a half in 3 years. If I take a distribution from my inherited IRA, do I have to pay it back in 3 years? So Sherry, the question is, do you inherit it from a spouse? Because if so, that's a little different. Then you can roll it into your own. And then yes, you could do the 3 years. If it's somebody else's, then I don't believe you can even take the early withdrawal, can you?
They've changed some of the rules with the non-spousal.
Yeah, I know you can't roll it for sure. You might be able to take the 100. Sitting here today, I don't know the answer, but I know that if it's a spouse, so inherit it from dad. So I am worried because that's technically their IRA. So it would still have their name on it, and you're the beneficiary.
Yeah, I think the problem with me inheriting my dad's IRA and then pulling $100,000 out, I can't put it back anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think I can. So, Sherry, that's something you would talk to your custodian about. I would say you probably know. Really good question. I may look that up just to, for my own sanity, because I'll start thinking about it. In 2018, we put a new roof on a property in California. It cost $30,000. If we sell this property in the next year or so, do we lose the depreciation?
That's not exactly how it works. So you put a new roof on it, increases your basis on that property by $30,000.
And get a big loss.
Right. So, I mean, you will depreciate it for the year or so that you have the property, but that's actually going to reduce when you sell it, it's going to reduce your gain on that property.
Yeah, but you also have the extinguished property. So if I put a new roof, there was an old roof that I replaced. And let's say that I had that old roof for 10 years, which is about what a roof, some of these roofs, depending on where you're at. In California, probably a little longer than that, right? Indiana, it seems like you're always replacing roofs. But let's just say that you had it for 10 years and it was a residential property. So it's 27 and a half year property. You're going to get to take the 17.5 as a disposition of that asset, right? So you're going to, the 17 and a half years that you didn't take yet, you would take all in when you put the new roof on.
Right. I think the big problem with that and why most accountants don't do that is they don't know what part of the purchase price was for
dorks.
They're
missing out so much.
Like they should have done cost segregation.
They should do a cost segregation. It's going to pay you a ton. Here's kind of the fun part of when you're looking at this. So if you sell the property, do you lose the depreciation? Kind of. You're going to get a big chunk of the depreciation. You're going to be recapturing a big chunk of depreciation. Mm-hmm. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to do that as a 1031 exchange, and you're just going to keep rolling forward your basis so that you don't have to pay tax. It's probably the easiest. If you don't care about that, then you're just going to pay tax. And what you're going to end up with is you're going to have disposed of an asset. So you wouldn't even have depreciation recapture on that, or would you?
You would still have depreciation recapture.
So on the disposal amount. So let's just say it was a $20,000 roof back when. You would take, and you had it for half the time, so you had it for 13 something years, then you would just take a deduction of the half, which is half of the 20 is 10,000, and now you have a new asset that you're depreciating of 30, and you'd have 1 year of the 1/27th and a half of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that, if you do a 1031 exchange, would you do cost segregation? Sometimes right before it. And the big question, I think we lost somebody. I like it when they do question mark. The way it works is kind of like this. Yes, you could do a cost segregation right before you sell. And we actually showed this before. When you do a cost segregation right before it sells, sometimes you save $60,000, $70,000 because you do not pay recapture on assets that have no fair market value and they're beyond their useful life. So carpeting, for example. If I have carpeting, it's worth 5 years. But if I depreciate it over 27 and a half years and I sell that property, I have to recapture that carpeting. Yep. Whatever I wrote up on that carpeting is now taxable up to 25%, even though that carpet's not worth a dollar. When you cost segregate it, as long as I own the property more than that 5 years, I'm not going to pay anything. That'll become long-term capital gains, but I have no recapture. So it's awesome.
And I think the big point here is that $30,000 cost for the new roof, you're not going to lose that. You're either going to depreciate it or you're going to deduct it from the sale or something.
And then somebody says, what about doing a 1031 exchange even on a cost seg? The cost seg you do so you can accelerate the depreciation.
Right.
Your depreciation isn't going to change when you do a 1031 exchange unless you buy a more expensive piece of property.
And we've run into that recently about doing cost segs on properties where the basis, because they've swapped several times, is so low, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. Yep. Would you cost seg a single family costing $300,000? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's just say your land value is 75 grand. You got 225,000. The average is going to be about $65,000 in year one as a deduction. If you're a real estate professional, that's going to be a lot of money in your pocket. If you're not, you're just not going to pay any tax on any of the gain, the real estate profits for a long time. So it just depends on what your tax bracket is and what other types of income you have. It's always worth calculating and it's free to calculate. I always say that in anything financial, anything tax, calculate. So Jeff has gone way over. I can't believe he did it again. Come and listen to some of our, I have to blame somebody because I have zero accountability.
It's not my fault, but you're going to blame me.
So this hour just became an hour and 53 minutes, but give or take 53 minutes. AndersonAdvisors.com podcast. By all means, come on and listen to some of the stuff that we put out. There's so much going on, guys. And so what we care about is you guys staying in business. And it's not just because we're benevolent. I root for small businesses, period, because I am one. But also because we want you guys to be really rich so you can hire us to do work. It sucks when you have clients with no money, right? You want clients killing it and very happy. So I hope that we're getting you some good information. If you're an accountant out there, fantastic that you're joining us, and we love our accounts too. If you love your replays and you want to watch some of the stuff, if you're platinum, you get unlimited access. I think we always have three or four up there, and it's always rolling around. If you go to the podcast, you're going to see lots and lots of stuff. We always put Tax Tuesdays up if you like to listen to them. Corey listens to them and he puts them on 1.5 speed, which is always.
They're normally done in an hour.
Yeah, it's done faster. And then you always go and see all of our stuff on YouTube. Clint speaks a lot slower than I. And Jeff's fantastic, and he's always a good sport. So anyway, if you have any questions, too, feel free to shoot them into Tax Tuesday. We get hundreds. We try to answer everything we can get our hands on. And if you're a client, obviously go through your Platinum portal. But don't ever hesitate. If there's good questions, we love to grab them and use them as part of our Tax Tuesday. So we will see you in 2 weeks. By that time, the PPP money is going to be gone and they'll be on to the third or fourth tranche. Don't worry, our grandkids will be paying this stuff off. I hope they don't try to make us pay the bill.
We're going to have a bond drive.
I know. Anyway, we're going to be selling a lot of chocolate bars to pay that off. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.